my name is Krista Karabi. I am an attorney in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I am a 2007 graduate of John Carroll University, which is in Cleveland, Ohio. I then went to law school in Pittsburgh at Duquesne University. I graduated there in 2010. After graduation, we had a really tough job market. As I'm sure some of you may know who have graduated in the recent years, the job market was quite tough. But I was fortunate enough to start right out of school at a firm in Pittsburgh. And I have been practicing in the area of insurance defense since September of 2010. The vast majority of my work is in the setting of car accidents. So we're going to be talking about insurance defense today, and we're going to go over the process that you follow once you get that initial claim file from the insurance carrier. A lot of the carriers are, you know, the big name ones that you see all their commercials: State Farm, Geico, Motorist, Safe Auto. All of those companies, they all have lawyers who do their work, and they all have their own processes that they follow, and they have different forms that they follow. They all have their little quirks, but for the most part, the handling of the case is very similar, especially in those early stages. You will probably start with the initial referral from a claims adjuster. Now, the claims adjuster that refers you the case is sometimes just getting the case themselves. They often don't know a whole lot about the case, so they are often looking to you to give them the background. Many of them are very overworked, they're overloaded, and they don't always know their cases inside and out, and that's why they have hired you, the attorney, to learn that case inside and out. Now, some of the adjusters have had the cases for 2 years or whatever your statute of limitations would be for filing, and they're very well aware of what's happening in the case, so they can be a great source of information for you to help you to understand where the case has been for the past year or two before it's been turned over to the attorney. Now, usually the cases are turned over because a formal suit or writ has been filed. Oftentimes the claims adjuster keeps it until that time. So the adjuster can sometimes be a wealth of information, or sometimes they are looking to you to be the person to really tell them what's going on. So in the initial call that you have with them, you're going to want to be prepared, because you could be talking to someone who knows more than you do, way more than you do, because they've had the claim for several years, or you're talking to someone who really needs educated. So knowing your file materials is very important when you're having an initial call with the adjuster. So when you get the file, there's always varying degrees of information that can be provided. Sometimes you will get a police report regarding how the accident happened. That's obviously very helpful for learning the initial facts of what happened. Usually that's in the setting of a car accident, but there's plenty of other incidents that would require a police report, such as a dog bite, or perhaps an incident that may have occurred on your property. So police reports are great. It's a great amount of information for you if you are lucky enough to have one. It also provides background information on the parties involved, information on witnesses, people who might have been around, saw what happened, other injured parties that maybe aren't part of your suit, but were a part of maybe a separate suit or have already settled. So those are things that you're really going to want to look at with the police report. information about where it happened and the facts, because those are the great thing about the police report is it's usually when everybody's got a fresh memory of what happened. Because as I'm sure you all know, as a practicing attorney, as time passes, people's memories get a little foggy, and things can certainly become a little fuzzy for people when they're trying to recall what happened. So that's the number one thing you're going to want to look for if you have that police report. The other thing that you're going to want to see if you have are photographs. Sometimes there's scene photographs, or there's photographs of damage that may have occurred to a vehicle or a property. In the case of a dog bite, sometimes you'll get pictures of a scar, or you might get some immediate post-accident photographs of injuries, which can be gruesome sometimes. But any type of photographic evidence is also helpful when you're evaluating a case. Scene photographs can show the damage that occurred, or if there's a question about how something may have happened, especially as the attorney who hasn't quite been to the scene or isn't familiar with where the incident happened, those photographs are really helpful to illustrate what happened. Now, with the now that you have the internet and you can Google image some of these things, that's also a helpful tool if you want to do that. Sometimes you can just pull up where an accident happened, and you can see, as further illustration from maybe the police report of how this happened, and maybe how someone got confused or someone didn't make a right turn when they were supposed to. So that's always very helpful information that's in the initial materials. Sometimes you will have a stack of medical records that are a foot high. Sometimes you'll have nothing at all. It just depends on what has been provided to the carrier. Now, in that case, you are really beholden to what plaintiff's counsel has done and what they have brought to the table and given to the adjuster for the evaluation of the case. Some attorneys are very proactive in sending things to adjusters, and some are not. It just depends on who's on the other side. But the medical records are obviously what you're going to be looking for to evaluate what happened to this person, to this plaintiff. What kind of injuries are they claiming? What kind of treatment did they undergo? That's a big part of what you're going to want to look at in these initial file materials is the medical treatment of an injured plaintiff. Now, if you're not dealing with an injured plaintiff and you're dealing with property damage, that's obviously a different situation, and you wouldn't have any medical records. In the situation of property damage, you're probably going to be relying largely on the photographs and invoices. Now, in either case, whether it's a bodily injury or property damage, the invoices are likely going to be in the materials. Those invoices could be from the, any of the damages that the plaintiff would have incurred, whether it's paying for a rental car because their car was damaged, paying for treatment, medical treatment, paying for repairs to whatever may have been damaged. Those invoices are so important to a plaintiff's claim that you're often going to see those in those initial materials, is the invoices. And you can always look at those and scrutinize those to see if what's included in the invoices was necessary and related to the incident. You'd be surprised. People can often try to slip things in that may not be part of what you're actually talking about, what your claim is actually about. Now, sometimes it's a mistake and sometimes it's not, but I would urge you to look at those very closely, because you never know what's going to be on those. And it also can provide you a roadmap of what someone might have done. Maybe you've gotten invoices for various medical providers, but you don't have any records. At least you know that this person treated with Mercy Hospital or whatever the case may be. You'll at least know from the invoices that the person underwent treatment at a certain place on a certain date, and you'll know that. And you'll also know from those invoices who paid it or if it's unpaid. Those are things that you will need to look at. In some states, first party benefits are required as part of your insurance package that you get for automobile or personal coverage or homeowner coverage. You're going to have a portion of the policy that covers any type of bodily injury. Some states require you to use your first party benefits to cover any type of injury. Some do not. It really just depends on the state. So if, depending on what state you're in, you'd have to know what the status is for your state's first party benefits. For example, in Pennsylvania, you have to use your first party benefits. You don't have a choice in the matter. If you have a policy, then you use your own policy for paying for that medical treatment. In Ohio, it's your choice. You can use your policy or you can use your own health insurance. It just depends on what you choose. So the other thing that is often included in the initial materials is something called a claim log. Sometimes they have them under different names depending on the insurance carrier, but almost always you're going to get something called a claim log. And these things are interesting animals. They have a lot of information in them. Again, it also depends on, you know, who's been handling your case up until the point it's been turned over to you as the attorney. So the claim log, again, can be a wealth of information or it can be somewhat spotty. But usually there is information in there that you're going to want to pull out. So in the case of an insurance defense claim, you're going to want to know the coverage that your client, the insured, has through whatever insurance carrier they have. In every state, the required coverage is different, but that claim log is going to tell you that information. It's going to let you know what type of coverage the defendant, your client, the insured, has. So there's usually a range available, usually an amount that is afforded per person, an amount that is afforded total. For example, you could have coverage at an amount of $25,000 per person and $50,000 per accident. So no one person can obtain or recover more than $25,000. But if there are more than one plaintiff, then you would have additional coverage available to spread out among injured plaintiffs. So that's something that is very important to your defense of the claim. Sometimes you might see a very low policy. I think I've seen policies that offer coverage in the amount of $12,500 per person and $25,000 total. So you may see that and look at your claim file and see that a person had a catastrophic injury, such as an amputation of sorts. You know, you never know, but you may look at your file and say, you know, there's limits here of $12,500 for this injured person who has lost their foot. So you have to just look at that and say, you know, it's probably best if we tender that money and obtain a release for the insured, the defendant, because that's the best way to protect the insured. And yes, you may have been retained by the insurance carrier, but in the majority of these settings, your client is the insured. You have to keep in mind what is best for that insured. So, and the insurance carrier has obviously a great amount of control over what happens in the litigation, but you really, as the attorney, you really should keep in mind what's best for your client, who is the insured. So back to the claim log and its information. Many times, adjusters will call the people who are involved, both plaintiff and insured defendant, witnesses, or other people that may have been involved in the incident. So you'll want to take a look at that claim log and see if there are notes that the adjuster might have taken on what everyone has said. So you may be able to look at the entries and see that on a certain date, the adjuster spoke with the insured, who stated that as he was driving down the road, his cell phone rang and he turned to get it. It was on the passenger seat. When he turned around, the plaintiff was stopped in front of him and he wasn't able to stop in time. You might see something like that, where the insured gives his or her version of the accident. And that's very important to your defense of the matter, because again, it's probably something that was given at an earlier time. You know, it's closer in time to when the actual incident happened, and those versions tend to be more reliable. So you're going to want to look for that. Sometimes claims adjusters will be able to speak to the plaintiff prior to obtaining representation. They'll talk to an adjuster and give their version of the accident. Sometimes plaintiffs try to settle these cases on their own, so they do work directly with the insurance carrier, and there can be some statements attributed to the plaintiff in the claim log. Sometimes people get lawyers immediately and they never talk to the adjuster, and that's something that happens as well. But oftentimes there is an initial call with the adjuster where the plaintiff offers some type of information about what happened. So also in the claim log, you could see certain payments that the insurance carrier might have paid out already to the plaintiff. That could be in the form of reimbursing property damage, reimbursing for a rental car, reimbursing for any unpaid bills or medical treatment. You're going to want to take a look at that, because you would want to make sure that the plaintiff isn't double dipping. You want to make sure that you read this claim log and you read it thoroughly enough to know that payments have already been issued to the plaintiff, and certain damages that they may try to claim have already been covered and they've already been paid for by the insurance carrier. So that's something that you'll also want to look at in your claim log. The other thing that claim logs might show is what type of benefits the plaintiff has. Sometimes you'll have a situation where both plaintiff and defendant are insured by the same company, in which case you'll have probably quite a bit of information about what plaintiff's insurance information is. Whether or not they have first-party benefits, whether or not they own a vehicle, whether or not they're going to be utilizing a certain policy to pay for their medical treatment or their damages. So that's something that you'll want to look at. There might be some more information about who the plaintiff is. Maybe you'll have information in there about where they work. That's not something that would be contained in a police report, but perhaps you'll know whether or not this person was injured in the course and scope of their employment, and you're dealing with a workers' comp claim on top of whatever insurance claim you are dealing with, whether it's a motor vehicle accident, homeowner's claim, or something like that. So that's always something that you'll want to look for. So your plaintiff's employment information, while not necessarily make or break information at the outset, is something that you'll absolutely want to learn through the course of your discovery process. But if you know it through the through researching and looking through your own file materials, it's always helpful. The more information you have on your plaintiff, the better. You know, is this an educated person, or is this a person who has a very high paying job and maybe you're going to be dealing with a very high wage loss claim? So those are always those are always good things to have when you're starting off your claim, the investigation of your claim. So also with the claim log, they may have spoken to witnesses and gotten their version of how the accident happened. Sometimes you'll see a recorded statement in the file materials, whether it's from plaintiff or the insured or a witness. Those recorded statements are really good sources of information, but the insurance carriers seem to be getting away from those now. I think a lot of people are either not cooperating with it, or just not they're just not going forward with it. It's not something you're seeing as much anymore, but oftentimes in the case of a liability situation, a denial of liability situation, you might see some recorded statements because the facts of the accident are extremely important in those cases. So the other thing that you might see in the claim log is settlement negotiations. Maybe prior to your involvement, the adjuster offered $10,000. Or there's been a series of negotiations, and you know you might have an idea of how far apart the parties are. Maybe upon your involvement, the parties are only $10,000 apart, but they had to file suit because the statute of limitations was coming up, and they needed to protect their claim. So that's also a very important thing to see what has gone on with regard to negotiations prior to your involvement. You're going to want to know that because your adjuster may at the outset tell you, okay, we have this case evaluated up to $15,000. And you're going to try and make engage into settlement negotiations, and you say as your initial offer, okay, we're going to offer you $2,500. Plaintiff's counsel might say, well, that's insulting because your adjuster offered me 10 about a month ago. So what happened to the money? So you're going to want to know what has gone on, if anything. Sometimes there are no negotiations, but you're going to want to know what has taken place with regard to settlement negotiations so you don't look like a fool when you're trying to negotiate the claim. You don't necessarily want to go backwards on something that the adjuster has already done. It looks like you don't know your file. And the main point of what we're talking about now is knowing your file and learning your file so you can properly handle a claim. So the claim log, they can sometimes be extremely long. They can sometimes have very odd abbreviations. It can read very strange, but if you kind of prod through it, you know, the important information is going to stick out to you, which is the facts of the accident, any statements that anybody may have made that the adjuster took note of, what kind of policy and coverage your client has, the defendant, or the coverage that the plaintiff has, the settlement negotiations, any background information on the plaintiff, and just the notes that the adjuster has been taking over the course of the claim. You just want to make sure you read that and you know what it says, because you want to know your claim and you want to know it as well.
First verification code is MUG, M-U-G, MUG. Please take a moment, write this down. The first verification code is MUG, M-U-G. Please take a moment and write this down.
As your adjuster. So you want to take your time with that document and make sure you really read it and go through it. So the other thing that, as we talked about with claim law, with the initial file materials, police report, medical records, bills, estimates for repair. Sometimes you'll see estimates in the file, and these are estimates for work that maybe hasn't been done. So you're going to want to scrutinize those to see if those estimates are really covering what was damaged in the incident that occurred. So after you've gone through the majority of your materials, put everything in order and really gotten to know what's happening with the want to talk to your adjuster and really prepare the strategy on defending your case. In the setting of a rear-end motor vehicle accident, you may just want to skip the whole argument about who's at fault, because it seems as though your client would likely be at fault. So there are many cases where there is clear fault, and you really don't have to go forward with too much of an investigation on who's at fault for the accident. Maybe you have a liability defense or a partial liability defense. You're going to want to know that, and you're going to want to, and your file materials should be able to tell you that. Or you're going to need to speak to your client, the insured, and you're going to need to get their version of the accident. Some insureds are very agreeable to admitting fault. They understand that they rear-ended the plaintiff, and this is their fault. So you have many different possibilities with regard to fault, as to who is at fault for the accident. So your initial file materials are likely going to advise on that, and they're going to illustrate who is at fault for what happened. So discuss that with your adjuster and whether or not you can raise any type of defense with regard to who is at fault for the accident. There are other defenses that could certainly be raised, which we won't get into too much detail right now, but as per your initial review of the materials, you're going to really want to know whether or not this is a case of admitting fault and we're moving on to damages, or is this a situation of, well, maybe we have some fault here on the plaintiff, and so we want to explore that. So that's something that you're going to want to talk to your adjuster about. And you're probably going to have to rely heavily on what your own client has said to you in your initial meeting. So the other things you're going to want to discuss with the adjuster is discovery and what type of process you're going to want to go through. How much does your adjuster want you to do? Are they going to put any restraints on what you do and how you do it? You're going to want to get all of that up front from your adjuster. What, you know, how willing they are to engage into this in discovery. Do they want you to go forward with depositions? What is it they want you to do? Do they have any issues with cost containment? Like I said, in the situation of a policy that is perhaps very low and you have a catastrophic injury, you're going to want to see what the best thing is for your insured, but you also want to consider, you know, the issue of cost containment. You know, what do you need to know to figure out how much this case is worth? Do you need to serve formal discovery, or would getting medical records from a certain provider help, or do you need to review an estimate for some type of damage to figure out, you know, what you're really looking for and what you're really trying to evaluate? So those are the things you're going to want to talk about. You're also going to want to know, likely because you have been involved in the matter, some type of formal of pleading has been filed, whether it's a writ or a formal complaint. You're going to want to obviously know that. So depending on what jurisdiction you are in, hopefully you can check online to see what's there and whether or not service has actually occurred. So you got to make sure, you know, that the plaintiff has filed in a timely manner and they have actually served the writ or the complaint, whatever it may be, in a timely manner. So you're going to want to check your local rules with regard to what your statute, your applicable statute of limitations is, and whether or not plaintiff has followed that. You're really going to want to make sure that you're not throwing away a defense, because a timely filing is something that you're going to really want to make sure that has occurred. Blown statutes occur. That's not it's happened before and it'll happen again. So you want to make sure that plaintiff and counsel has done what they need to do to properly file their complaint and serve it in a timely manner. So once you get your complaint, you need to determine whether or not there can be what you want to do with regard to a responsive pleading. Do you need to file preliminary objections? Is there a problem with venue? Is there a problem with service? Is there something in the complaint that is just completely irrelevant and needs and should be taken out? You want to scrutinize that initial complaint to determine whether or not preliminary objections are necessary. If they are not and you want to move on to answering the complaint, you will need to rely heavily on your initial file materials as well as your initial meeting with the insured. How are you going to answer this complaint? And what type of defenses are you going to raise? You really want to make sure that you know what happened so you can properly respond to that complaint. Was there icy road conditions? Was there an emergency? Was there a medical emergency? Did your client pass out at the wheel? Was there an assumption of the risk? Was the plaintiff trespassing on a property that they shouldn't have been on? You're going to want to know all your facts before you create those responsive pleadings. But oftentimes those are time sensitive, so you really do need to make an effort to really get to know your facts and get to know your claim file and speak with your client so you can really handle the matter properly and in a timely manner. So after meeting with your client and determining whether or not responsive pleadings, what you're going to do with a responsive pleading, you're going to want to start the discovery process. So the discovery process, again, you want to talk to your adjuster about what it is they want you to do, what exactly are they looking for you to figure out and evaluate. What are you going to utilize to figure this out? Are you going to serve interrogatories, request for production of documents? Are you going to serve subpoenas? Are you going to schedule depositions? These are all things that you will want to talk to your adjuster about and make sure that they are okay with you pursuing all of this discovery. So the initial discovery is usually very important to figuring out what the claim is. Oftentimes, complaints don't tell the whole tale. Most of the time, a complaint brushes some broad strokes, so you have a general idea of what the plaintiff is claiming and what their damages or what damages they're claiming. But you really need to get into the details of things. So interrogatories are very helpful with regard to learning background information on a plaintiff, what type of insurance coverage they have, any past injuries that they may have. Sometimes you can request social media information through discovery. You would be surprised, although maybe not anymore, how much people discuss things on Facebook, especially injuries. I've seen plenty of plaintiffs post vehicle damage photographs on their Facebook or different complaints about what they have gone through, maybe medical treatment-wise or financially. That's something that you can use, that you can look for in discovery. But that's also something that you want to tread lightly with. There are some ethical issues with regard to Facebook that you will want to look into your local rules and jurisdiction about, because some places are a little more strict about investigating social media. So you want to be careful with regard to your local rules. And making sure you don't overstep your bounds on doing any type of online surveillance of your plaintiff. So you can also ask plaintiffs to sign authorizations, whether it's to obtain medical records or employment records. Some people will use a subpoena and have kind of go around the plaintiff, but as long as there's no objections to your subpoena, then you know you'll get your information. Some plaintiffs are uncomfortable with the use of a subpoena, but that's just something that you'll have to work out with plaintiff's counsel and how you would want to pursue obtaining certain information, because when you're investigating a bodily injury claim, a lot of times you need pre-accident records, so you're going to want to make sure you truly investigate where the plaintiff is treated prior to your accident. Maybe they're complaining of a neck injury, but they were in a car accident 3 years before the one that you're defending. So you're going to want to know all that information, and that's a lot of times what you will find out at the deposition. Is what kind of treatment history the plaintiff has, and what they've been doing, and you know who is their primary care physician, who have they treated with? Have they treated with the same primary care physician for 10 years? You know, you're going to want to get those records. You're going to want to know what type of treatment and anything that the plaintiff might have done to treat over the years before the accident, but it's just as important to investigate after the accident. Maybe there's no pre-accident incident, but there might be a post-accident incident. That's something that's just as important. These are all things that you really want to investigate, because you know, we talked a little bit about earlier in the CLE about determining fault, and you know, is there going to be some type of apportionment of fault? There's other things that you know you're going to want to look at to really truly investigate your claim. So the other thing is the causation issue and addressing what actually caused the plaintiff's injuries or damages, whatever they're claiming. You really want to investigate that causation issue, and that's oftentimes something that is really going to take up the lion's share of your investigation. You really want to address that causation issue with regard to the pre-accident treatment or potentially the post-accident treatment. Maybe this plaintiff was involved in the accident, but then didn't go to the hospital for 2 weeks. You know, that's something that you're going to want to take into account. and to determine what is actually, if this incident that you're investigating is truly truly the cause of the plaintiff's damages. So the causation issue is something you will spend quite a bit of time on. But I'm going to go back to the general idea of discovery in these cases. So if you're in a case where, maybe you're in a case where there are multiple defendants, there's a three-car accident, or there is a property, someone is injured on a property and there are multiple owners, or there are, when there's multiple defendants, you're also going to want to serve discovery on those defendants as well. And in the pleading stage, when you're dealing with multiple defendants, you want to make sure that you have properly addressed your co-defendants in your pleadings. Do you need to file a cross-claim or perhaps a counterclaim? What do you need to do with your filings when you're dealing with a situation of multiple defendants? Maybe your plaintiff, when they initially filed, they only filed against your insured, but it comes to light that there was another party involved, and there's somebody else who could potentially be attributed some fault. So you want to make sure that you join those defendants as soon as possible. Many states have a time limit on when you can join those additional defendants. So that's something that you're really going to want to pay attention to in the early pleading stage, is whether or not there is another defendant who should be listed. Or if the plaintiff has listed multiple defendants, you want to make sure you properly address those other defendants in the pleading stage and also in the discovery phase. You want to make sure that you get their version of the accident. Maybe there's a recorded statement in your initial file materials, but if there's not, then you're going to want to serve discovery on that defendant, that co-defendant or additional defendant, whatever it may be, and you're going to want to figure out their version of what happened. You know, you want to be, it's better safe than sorry to join somebody. It's much easier to let them out later in the litigation than it is to try and join them when you have done it outside the proper time period. So that's something that you also want to think about when you're handling your claim, is whether or not somebody else belongs in this litigation. Or if there's somebody that's already there, why are they there? What is the idea behind their joinder in the litigation? What type of fault or responsibility do they bear in this situation? So don't forget about the fact that other people, other defendants may need to be joined, and if they're already there, you need to properly address them. And you also want to make sure that they've been properly served as well. So not that there's much you can do about that, but you still want to make sure that that's something that's taken place and has been done correctly. Sometimes you'll have a, when you're dealing with other defendants, you will, again, like I said, you're going to want to determine what their version of the incident was and how they fit into this. And you're going to want to talk to their counsel and also see if you can find out what type of insurance coverage they have, what they're bringing to the table, and see if they have any information about the plaintiff that maybe you don't have quite yet. Maybe they were farther along in the discovery process than you were, and they may have some light to shed on what's happening. So you're going to want to utilize your discussions with the other attorneys who may be representing the other defendants. So your depositions are going to be an extremely important part of what you're going to do, how you're going to truly evaluate the case, and make decisions about where the case goes from that point. So when you're deposing.
Second code is book, B-O-O-K. The second verification code is book, B-O-O-K. Please take a moment and write this down. The second verification code is book, B-O-O-K. Please take a moment and write this down.
Your plaintiff, you really want to get a true and full picture of what happened from their perspective, what happened, what type of injuries they have sustained or what type of damages they have sustained. Have they missed work? Is there wage loss? Have they been fired from a job because they couldn't continue with those job responsibilities? Is there a claim for out-of-pocket expenses? Maybe this person had to go to physical therapy 50 times and they paid a $20 copay every time. You're going to want to know that. You're going to want to know what their treatment timeline was. What did they do after the accident? What were their immediate complaints? Did they develop something later that they believe to be related to the accident? How has it affected their life? Where are they now with regard to their accident-related injuries? If you're dealing with a situation of maybe property damage or damage to a home, you're going to want to know whether or not there's been a repair made, or is the property still damaged, or is it beyond repair? What happened to what is damaged? What is its current state? You need to utilize your discovery process to really figure out those issues and determine what it is, how you're going to evaluate the case. Do you need an expert to comment on what happened? Do you need an accident reconstructionist? Maybe you'll sit through the depositions of three different people and they'll tell you three different things. You know, maybe you can utilize an accident reconstructionist to help you determine what happened. Maybe you need an engineer to evaluate damage to a property. Maybe you need a medical professional to evaluate the plaintiff's treatment and their injuries to tell you what is truly related to the accident. These are all things that you will likely need to wait and see about, because you're going to want to depose, you're going to want to gather as much information as you possibly can from all of the parties. You're going to want to take the depositions, and you're going to want to make sure you have everything that you need to truly evaluate the case, because likely at the conclusion of your depositions, you're going to talk to your adjuster again, and he or she is going to say, okay, what are we doing with this? Where do you recommend we go with this? Do we try and settle the case? Do we try and retain an expert? Do we list it for trial and say, you know, we're just going to trial on this one? You're going to want to talk to your adjuster about that. That's going to be a decision that you come to together. You're going to obviously offer your recommendations about what you think has happened, who's at fault, what type of injuries are in play, has something been resolved via maybe a release or other thing. You know, what have you done to truly determine where this case is going? What are you going to do to resolve it? So that's something that you're going to want to do with your adjuster, and you're going to want to make that decision together. There are plenty of avenues you can take with regard to trying to resolve a case. Maybe this is the type of case that should go to a mediation, and you can have somebody who is trying to bring the parties together without court intervention. But that's again something that you're going to have to figure out once you have actually gone through your entire discovery process. So you want to probably look back at everything that you've done throughout the entire litigation. You're going to want to look back at those initial materials. You're going to want to look at the police report. You're going to look at all the medical records, repair estimates, recorded statements, maybe employment records, health insurance records, photographs. You want to look back at all of your information that you have and that you've amassed over your time period with the file, and you're going to want to scrutinize all of that and really look at the whole picture of what you've done and how you've defended the claim to determine where you want to go from there. Do you want to retain experts? Do you want to try to reach a settlement? Or are you going to deny that that you owe the plaintiff anything and you're going to go to trial? There's obviously different options, and every case is different. But the overall best way to approach these insurance defense claims is to truly understand and go through your file materials and your discovery to see what it is the plaintiff is claiming and whether or not they are owed anything for their damages. You want to make sure that there are you leave no stone unturned. You know, get into medical records, get into employment records, look into health insurance records if that's something that you think that you need. Damage information. Sometimes you can get records from the IRS to see if the person's income has truly been affected. Some people may say, you know, I couldn't go to work for a month. Well, that may be true, but maybe you were paid the whole time. So maybe you truly have no damage. Maybe you truly have no loss that you need to recover because your company still paid you. So when plaintiffs are making these claims, you want to take each claim and truly test out its validity. With regard to injuries, you know, your best bet is medical records. You go through the pre-accident records and the post-accident records. You want to really get a picture of what the plaintiff has done to treat the injuries. If they're talking about wage loss, you know, try and get the employment file to see how much time they have truly missed. And if their salary or income has truly been affected, you can pursue records from the IRS. If they are working in the course and scope of their employment, you know, you want to see if there's a lien that you need to repay, or if the person's health insurance is entitled to reimbursement. You know, make sure that you're really looking into all of these potential damages that a plaintiff may have and make sure that they're truly related. Is there a time period that, is there a certain time in the treatment where the plaintiff said, you know what, I'm 100% better? So you want to know that date and know that the damages or anything that they may be trying to claim past this date, you know, we don't think that this is related, so we're not going to consider it. But your other things, such as copays or estimates for repair, make sure you have the proof to support those things. Make sure your plaintiff and counsel has provided you with the proper proof that these damages are real and they're related to the incident and what happened. You want to really, really scrutinize things and make sure that this is all related. Because any time you can prove that it is not related is certainly a win. You know, as defense counsel, you want to minimize the damage. You want to minimize the type of exposure that your insured the exposure to your insured may have, and you want to minimize the amount that your insurance carrier has to pay out. So you really want to scrutinize what they're giving you to see truly is it related and is it something that you should truly be responsible for. You don't want to see your client responsible for something that they shouldn't be responsible for. They should be this is something that has nothing to do with the incident, and you want to make sure that you're protecting your insured. Think about that as you are truly defending the case. What is in the best interest of my client, and how do I minimize any exposure that he or she may have in the sense of this insurance claim. Now you do have insurance, which is a nice safety net, and that's why you pay your premiums every month. So if you get into a situation like this, you have that coverage. You have your insurance carrier behind you, with that money to potentially pay out for damages and to pay for the attorney to defend your case. As they say, that's why you pay every month for insurance, because it's a safety net for you to protect against claims like these, which there's many different types of insurance claims, but that's why you have it, and that is why you pay. So just to wrap up here at the end, the initial thing we talked about was what's in your initial file. Make sure you know what you got, what you have in there, and scrutinize that to determine what happened and what type of defenses you can raise, and how you want to proceed with your discovery process. You don't want to go through unnecessary discovery, so it's best to understand what's happening from those initial file materials. But then you want to take advantage of that discovery process to truly understand the complaints and the damages that the plaintiff is making, and take into account that there are many different things that you can do for discovery. There's interrogatories, there's requests for production of documents, requests for admissions, subpoenas, authorizations. There's many different avenues to obtain information about what the plaintiff is claiming. So your purpose is to protect your insured and scrutinize what the plaintiff is claiming and determine if there's any way to debunk it and make sure that you're not paying for something that your client is not responsible for. My name is Krista Karabi. I'm an attorney in Pittsburgh. My email address is kkarabi, that's KKARABI, at summersmcdonald.com. That's SummersMcDonnell, .com. If you have any questions with regard to the basics of insurance defense, I'm happy to answer anything that any questions you may have. I'm always happy to help other lawyers whenever I can. I'm certified in Pennsylvania and Ohio, so those are my two states that I am probably best suited to answer your questions. But handling an insurance claim is often very similar in any state. You obviously want to check your local rules with regard to statute of limitations and any other specific time limit responses or discovery deadlines. You always want to make sure that you have taken into account your specific jurisdiction's rules. Here in Pennsylvania, many of the counties have different rules So you always want to know your venue. You always want to know what it is, any deadlines that may be haunting you. You always want to make sure you have your deadlines and you know when they are, know your rules, your state's rules, your local rules. You want to know those so you aren't missing any of those deadlines that you need to know. Otherwise, you know, the court can certainly bar you from doing certain things if you have failed to meet the proper deadlines. I would certainly urge you to take a look at your local rules. If you don't know them well, I would certainly urge you to look at those because they are very, very important with regard to properly handling your claim in the specific jurisdiction where the case was filed. Again, my name is Krista Karabi. If you have any questions, I would hopefully be able to help you. I hope you enjoyed the program today. I certainly enjoyed doing this. So again, any questions, please don't hesitate to contact me. Thank you.